Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. We want to welcome you to the November 5th, 2018 meeting of your Ferndale City Council. We welcome you and invite you to stand for the salute of our flag.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. And we will have the roll call of your city council by our city clerk.
Council members are here. Council member Greg Hansen.
Here.
Council member Olson.
Here.
Council member Taylor.
Here. Mm-hmm.
Council member Watson.
Here.
Council member Kate Hansen.
Here.
Council member Kennedy.
Here. Everybody is here. Thank you for being here tonight. And we now move on to public comment. This is the time in the evening that we allow the public to speak on any item that is not on the agenda. If what you'd like to talk about is on our agenda, why don't you wait till a little bit later in the evening, and we give you 3 minutes. We just ask that you introduce yourself and tell us where you're from. Who would like to go first? Welcome.
My name is Birgit Melton. I'm 12 years old. I attend Vista Middle School and have lived in Ferndale my entire life. I'm here today to share with you my story and experience with the Ferndale Municipal Courthouse and highly encourage your consideration for prioritizing a new and improved building. 2 years ago, in October of 2016, myself and four of my friends were witness to an assault case that involved another one of our friends. She was a victim that was inappropriately touched by an older man. We gave our depositions to the Ferndale Police Department, and seven months later, the case was taken to trial. The perpetrator was originally charged with third-degree assault with sexual intent. When it got sent to the Whatcom County Prosecutor's Office, for reasons I did not know at the time, the prosecutor's office bumped the charge down to fourth-degree assault, making it a misdemeanor case that would be tried in the city of Ferndale. In May of 2017, my friends and I gathered at the police station because there is no room for our group to comfortably wait for opportunity to testify against the perpetrator at the courthouse. I was called to the courthouse about half an hour before I was able to testify. I was waiting in a small room adjacent to the courthouse. Aside from this being the most terrifying thing I have ever done in my life, having to wait in a small, unwelcoming environment only added to my anxiety. Prior to entering the courtroom, the prosecutor had explained that the defendant would be far from the witness stand. However, when I entered the room, he was less than 15 feet away from me, which made me feel extremely unsafe and anxious. The only exit door was directly behind the defendant's table or at the back of the room behind the jury, who sat in rolling office chairs in front of the audience. I appreciate that Detective Pike was sitting next to me, but it was little consolation to the anxiety that I felt. There were moments where I also felt unsafe when the defendant's lawyer approached the witness stand without asking. It is clear that the space was not set up for having trials that involve children and those who have experienced trauma. During the questioning phase, I was terrified. I felt like I was the one being tried for lying. The fact of the matter is that I was telling the truth, and nothing about the courtroom environment made me feel safe or supported. By the time I had finished my testimony and was released from the witness stand, I was visibly in tears. My friend, the victim, was scheduled to testify next, and my mother had to shield my face with her jacket so my friend would not be upset by seeing me crying. Based on my experience and that of my friends, this space is not fit for anyone who has experienced trauma. I feel that Ferndale could do a better job in providing that safe and supportive environment for those who have experienced traumatic events, so that when they testify, the best case is made for seeking justice.
Thank you very much.
Okay. My name is Anya Milton, Ferndale City resident of 13 years. I am Birgit's mother, an advocate for youth, an involved community member. If you haven't already guessed why my daughter and I are here, we're here for you to call. We are calling for the consideration of a new and improved facility for the municipal court system here for the city of Ferndale. Despite the fact that nothing about the trial that she described was normal, what I'm here to tell you is that Ferndale is ill-equipped for trying any cases that require a youth-centered and or trauma-informed response. According to the city administrator, Greg Young, the city of Ferndale tries roughly 8 cases a year, and hardly any of them involve children. However, there is no reason why our community, and my tax dollars and yours, cannot contribute to an improved facility and municipal court system. There are 2 things I would like the city to consider in order to ensure the best opportunities for justice to be served at the municipal level. First is to have a courtroom that is staffed with individuals who are informed and trained with the appropriate responses for trying cases where victims and witnesses have unique and sensitive needs. In addition, it is imperative to ensure that the safety and security of those who have endured trauma, sparing re-traumatization in the courtroom. This means the city should make sure that their contracted lawyers and municipal judges are trained and sensitive to these issues. The second thing that the city of Ferndale could do is address the need for having a modern and safe courthouse that takes into consideration emergency exits, staging and meeting rooms prior to testifying, and a courtroom layout that will best support a well-run trial. If you haven't been to a trial at this location, I strongly urge you to consider attending to see how ill-equipped we are as a municipal court. You, counsel, must be informed as to what we truly need as we assume the responsibility to make necessary changes that meet the needs of this growing community. I hope you'll recognize that we need a 21st century approach to trying 21st century cases in a 21st century building. As many of you know, I'm always happy to be part of a solution. My office is down the street, and my door is always open. Thank you for your time.
Thank you very much. Thank you, ladies, for coming tonight. Are there others that would like to speak to City Council during public comment? Seeing none, we will close the public comment time. Folks, you have next on your agenda the consent agenda. The mayor would like to ask a point of privilege and remove for a separate vote the appointment to the Parks, Recreation, and Trails Advisory Board. As the candidate is here, we'd like to introduce you. If there's no objection, we'll pull that and make that first item. Okay. Other than that, would there be a motion to adopt the rest of the consent agenda?
So moved.
Second.
So moved and seconded, Councilmember Taylor and Councilmember Greg Hansen, to adopt the consent agenda minus the appointment to the parks per tab. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed nay, and the consent agenda has been adopted. It's the privilege of the mayor to appoint people to boards and commissions, and sometimes there's just an extra fun story involved with those appointments. I want to invite up front, she'll come, is Eleanor or Ellie Margulies. Pretty good?
Yes.
Close enough?
Margulies.
She said like Hercules.
Like Hercules.
And some neat things about Ellie is that she's a business owner here in downtown Ferndale, and she is opening up the International Athletic, which is one of the larger spaces. In fact, she can't stay late. We were going to do this during Mayor's comment, but she is working tonight on her Flex Lab something.
Flex Movement Lab.
There you go. Flex Movement Lab.
Yeah.
It's pretty exciting. She was also nominated, one of 7 people by the Bellingham Business Journal to be one of 7 under 40 business owner. And this has been going on a number of years, and she was the first ever Ferndale nominee to this award. And she, in fact, won the thing outright first place. So we want to congratulate you for well representing Ferndale.
Thank you.
But more important to me is that you've accepted our invitation to serve on PERTAP as a Parks, Trail, and Recreation Board member. And before they make a motion to appoint you, do you have anything you want to say to us?
I'm really excited. I moved to Ferndale when I was 4 years old, and life really has come full circle. I was one of those that escaped when I was 19 and moved to Seattle for 10 years, and not only did I move home in 2015, I now have taken over the family farm that I was raised on up on Alder Grove in Olson. My mother was president of the Water Board Association for many years, and so I absolutely love Whatcom County, and Ferndale is very near and dear to my heart, and I am thrilled to not only have a business on Main Street in a store that I used to go to get my Ferndale Pride items, but also to, you know, have a chance to serve here, the city, and the people at a little bit larger scale. Not quite as big as you guys yet, but, you know, got to start somewhere, so.
And if you get a chance, she has a remarkable story of success and overcoming and things like that. Too much for here, but I got to hear it, and I invite all of you to get together right here and here. So with that, I would be looking for a motion to appoint Ellie to the Parks Board.
So moved.
Second. Moved by Councilmember Gray Hansen, seconded by Councilmember Kennedy to appoint Ellie to the Parks, the PERTAB. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those say no, What's the word I think? Nay? No nays. You're all in. You nay. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Moving on to item C is the Capital Projects Update with our projects manager, Katie Ratter. Welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
What's going on in town?
There is. We're getting close to the end of the year, so that means we're wrapping up construction, and just have a real brief update for you. First, we'll talk about Washington Street, and then we'll talk a little bit about Cherry Street and the Pioneer Park sidewalk projects, and then get into our upcoming projects for later this year and next year. So since the last time I was up in front of you talking about Washington Street, we've completed the paving of the project. The contractor installed two speed tables, one on the eastern portion of the road, one on the western portion. We've also finished up the restoration work and landscaping. Plus, they've finished up the striping, raising iron, and basically putting the road back in order. So we were able to do a ribbon cutting. I believe that's been a couple weeks ago now. And immediately after the ribbon cutting, the contractor pulled the barricades, opened the road, and restored it back to traffic. So there was a lot of people that worked pretty hard on this project. Our capital project inspector, Jared Erb, was out there quite a bit, actually working with the contractor and making sure everything was constructed per plan. The contractor did a great job. That was Ram Construction. And we're excited to have this particular project done. So I don't know if anybody has any questions about this one.
I just have one.
Yes.
Did I see the picture look like it was fully paved? Did we dig that up and then put in the concrete?
Yes, and so the reason for that is when you pave the street, in order to maintain a smooth level surface, you have to start off with a smooth level surface. So the question became, if we put in a speed table and then tried to pave up to it, it would mean mobilizing the equipment onto different sides of the road, pulling away from the speed table, pulling towards the speed table, and really it would have wouldn't have resulted in as decent of a end product as sacrificing some of the asphalt, pulling it up, and then building the speed table after. So you're absolutely correct.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
And I think these are the first speed tables in the city, permanent ones.
That I am aware of,
yes. Not the accidental ones that just emerged out of nowhere.
Next is the Cherry Street and Pioneer Park sidewalk project. Both of those projects are complete. There's pedestrians, children, and the occasional fowl that use the sidewalk there on Cherry Street. The park project, in my opinion, which is kind of humble and barely anybody pays attention to it anyway, but has been a pretty good success. I can't recall ever working on a project in the past where, you talk to people about it and they have nothing but complimentary things to say. We had a ribbon cutting, Riley organized that last week, and it was very gratifying to see folks and hear folks talk about their relative or their friend that's never been able to experience Pioneer Park to be able to go down there and enjoy the cabins, and I just think that's a great thing for the community.
That's a great
So both of those projects actually have come in, as far as I can tell, our projections are showing that they are within budget, so that's good too. So for later on in the year, just when we think we're done, we have more stuff to do. So later on this month, as far as upcoming stuff to be looking forward to, the city submitted TIB applications for three different projects and three different grant funding programs that the Transportation Improvement Board has. One is for Main Street, which would resurface it from the East City limits to Barrett Road. We also submitted an application for Portalway sidewalks to be installed from basically the roundabout all the way to, I think, Cherry? Is that right? My memory isn't that great, so Kevin's going to save me here.
Up to the Mexican restaurant.
Oh, no.
Yes. Okay. Yeah. Oh, okay. So that section through there, looking at doing some gap filling for the sidewalks out on Portal, so kind of a start to that, needed improvement that we've got for Portal.
Is that curbs, gutters, the whole thing, or is it temporary sidewalks?
We have not designed the project. I would envision that in sections where we could get curb and gutter in, we can do that. It will require road widening, so it's dependent on what the section is, but I would anticipate that there'll be sections that'll mirror what we did with the Cherry Street improvements down there.
We also put in a funding application for the Thornton Street overcrossing project. So we anticipate, usually TIB, they look at these things and then issue their awarded projects in November. So that should be coming after pretty quick.
Katie?
Yes.
So the Main Street resurfacing, is that going to be like when they had the machine that kind of ate up the road and then melted it back out, or is...
Well, it's not designed either, and so there's different ways that you can do that. We did a resurfacing project on Portal Way where there was some grinding and overlay where you would leave some of the existing hard surface there and just pave over the top of it. We did a project on Barrett Road a few years back, actually through the same program, where the entire road was ground up and milled. That existing asphalt was graded out, and then we paved over the top of it. So it just depends on what's there and what can be saved. And that's, the engineer's call as to what's going to, be the least expensive process and what's going to last the longest.
I was just wondering, because there's so many trucks that hit that road. I was just wondering if we had to do something special because of all the weight.
It kind of depends on what the existing ground is there. And, okay.
Thank you.
You're welcome. So then looking forward to December, I know that the city is working on a solution for the accident kind of ridden area there on Main Street between I-5 and LaBounty. That's the driveway in and out of where the old Bob's Burger and Brew was at. So I think our crews will be putting in some delineators. Kevin was explaining to me today. To cut off left turn movement in and out of that driveway.
We anticipate on having that done at some point between December 1st and December 31st. It is weather dependent, so we'll be looking for a window of good weather to get out and put that in place.
And Mr. Mercer, could you mention briefly the extra efforts that went into studying this and working with the property owners?
We did. We had originally, the chief had brought forward a concern over the increase in traffic accidents that we'd been seeing. And I know that, Joe had some good photos on his site, the recent rollover accident at that location. So we'd really identified that as a safety concern for the city. And then through the notification process of going out and talking with the property owners, we actually went into a rather lengthy process involving both our traffic engineers as well as the property owners' traffic engineers, and looking at the situation out there, vetting the number of crashes, the severity of the crashes, and contributing factors to those, and trying to come up with what would be the best mitigation strategy for it. In the end, we have decided that precluding the left turn movement from Main Street and also from the parking lot going out onto Main Street was going to be the best solution for that. And as I think anybody that has left town at 5 o'clock in the afternoon knows, the eastbound lane of Main Street, that's the through lane that goes across the bridge, is often backed up and stopped. So there's a row of traffic there with people in the turn lane. There's the natural tendency of people to give the people a space in order for them to make the turn and get into the parking lot. Unfortunately, that right-hand lane is going at a rather high rate of speed, and so there's a point of conflict there. So we'll be cutting off that turning movement, and I believe it's going to be a big safety benefit to the area. I know that the property owner did have concerns and continues to have concerns over what they perceive as an impact to the businesses in there, and we have committed to working cooperatively with them to vet any increased signage or areas that we can, you know, utilize our social media to highlight the change in the traffic pattern and try to make that as you know, painless for everybody as possible.
Thank you, Mr. Jones. Okay.
So then, continuing on in early 2019, council can expect to see Public Works Department bringing forward to you some design contracts. First is the Ferndale Terrace reconstruction project, which would reconstruct Ferndale Terrace from Molloy all the way to Hendrickson, including new stormwater, water, and sewer facilities. Our stormwater folks were able to obtain a grant from the Department of Ecology to help fund part of that design. So we're working on getting to contract together for that design project. Next is the decant facility. A decant is basically the city under its stormwater permit is required to clean out catch basins, and the material that's left in the catch basins is it's got contaminants in it, and so it needs to be dried because it's a slurry when it comes out of the catch basin. Decant basically allows you to dump your slurry material out of the Vactor truck. It's a covered area. The water can run away from the solids. It allows it to dry because when you dispose of the material, you have to pay by the pound. So if you don't have to pay for the water, it's less expensive to dispose of. So that decant facility design, I believe, is also funded through the Department of Ecology. And we're working through a RFQ process to select a consultant, and we'll be bringing forward a contract for that design as well. Third on the list is a waterline extension between Nordic Way to Scout Place, which includes a bore under the railroad tracks. And what that does is it improves or corrects a deficiency in the city's fire supply in the area off Scout Place.
Yeah, in between Nielsen and Hovander. Mm-hmm. Out there we have a deficiency in the fire flow, which results in higher than desirable velocities within the lines and the potential for water hammer within the system. So we're looking to correct that.
And then also early in 2019, we'll be putting a contract out to address the intersection of First Avenue at Main Street to take out the signal poles, add some, I think, flashing beacons, do some additional striping. So we'll need some decent weather for that. So maybe early 19 is a little bit enthusiastic, but maybe mid-spring, if we have an exceptionally wonderful spring. I'm sure we will.
You mean like the one at the library where you push the button and the street flashes? So we can get those now again?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, that proprietary thing was...
It is.
I think you saw it.
So then summer next year, we anticipate completing a project or getting underway with construction to decommission a sewer pump station. That's pump station 19. That's at the very end of Molloy Village. If you drive back in there and kind of do the loop, what that will do is that will run a sewer line from that pump station through the Sampson Rope property and tie into the large interceptor line that the city installed last winter down Thornton Street. And then following up with that, as we have a little tiny project that we hope to get going on, and that is the Thornton Overcrossing project.
Woo! Yay!
Yeah. So that will probably start off with the preloading of the soils to get ready for the construction of the bridge.
Questions of council? Great presentation.
Thank you
very much, Katie. Moving on to item D, a presentation, countywide wayfinding analysis. Mr. Burnett, currently the community development director.
Good evening, council. Good evening, Mr. Mayor. both Katie and Haley always put together such attractive presentations, and I was noticing that hers, that Katie's was 26 slides. So is mine, but mine will probably take a little bit longer, but we'll see. First off, today is the 63rd anniversary of Dr. Emmett Brown discovering the flux capacitor. So
flux.
I'm flux, sorry. Yes. It's science. I don't really know.
That's
the font. So that is the font. So we're talking wayfinding. We brought this before council a few years ago, the basic concept of wayfinding. Wanted to give you a refresher on what wayfinding is, updates to where we are, and then talk a little bit more about next steps. And we're going to be delivering this pretty close to the same presentation to the Ferndale Downtown Association Wednesday morning. So I'm going to go through some topics, and so hopefully I will get to your questions, but feel free to ask questions if I don't. But we begin with, what is wayfinding? Wayfinding is, there's a lot of, again, science and psychology behind it, where it's a coordinated system of signs and other visual cues that help to guide both visitors and residents to their destination. And it can be whether they're navigating through an entire region, through a city, or through a neighborhood. But there's a lot of thought that goes into it, because wayfinding is not just a collection of uncoordinated signs. It's not trying to fit as many signs as you can in a space, which is often the immediate reaction is, let me just put another sign, because if 10 signs won't do it, then 11 signs will. It's also making sure that you don't have a sign for every single destination. And because as you're a motorist, you can really only process a certain amount of information as you're driving through. And once you have 10 or 12 different inputs, you start getting confused, which is sort of what we have right now, where we have a lot of uncoordinated signage. We have, even though you might not notice them, and that's an important point, if you travel along most of our corridors, we have a lot of signs. They're all saying different things. Sometimes they don't talk to one another. Sometimes they're outdated. Sometimes there's a sign where you can't see it and it doesn't make sense. Sometimes there's no sign where you'd expect there to be a sign and it would make the most good. Also, one of the deficiencies that we have is, for a visitor, there's nothing all that unique to Ferndale. City center this way. All right, great. You know, everybody has a city center. Hovander Park this way. Tennant Lake this way. Pioneer Park this way. It doesn't really tell anyone what any of those things are beyond them just being a park. Also, once you get there, there's no sense of arrival. You might not know that you've actually gotten to Pioneer Park once you've gotten there. So if you're truly a visitor to Ferndale, you might be saying, what's the sign that gets me out of this city? Because I'm confused and I don't know what's going on. So that brings us to this study. Bellingham Whatcom County Tourism is the lead for this, and they've contracted with Merge, which is a consultant out of Pennsylvania, where they and Whatcom County have recognized that really this entire region has similar issues. People know about Bellingham, and people know about Mount Baker, but for the rest of the small communities, we're kind of drive-through country. We're kind of Whatcom County's version of Ohio or Indiana Iowa.
Whoa,
no, I did that on purpose. Okay, wow, threat. But because generally what happens when people do get to the destination is, oh, you found us. Almost surprised that people decided to go to Ferndale instead of Bellingham or instead of Mount Baker. And collectively, we all want to change that. So started off with, well, what are our different communities? And there's certainly more than these, but obviously Mount Baker and Bellingham are just two of them. Not all of these are incorporated cities. Not all of them are distinct sub-areas, but they're important things that we think a visitor would be interested in. And what Merge did is they said, okay, how can we kind of distill these concepts down where if we tried to talk about everything that was unique about all of these different areas, we're still just talking and there's a lot of fluff in there. So they said, you know, objectively looking at this, we have a sea, a coastal community or grouping of communities. We've got farmland and ag, which is an important part of our identity as well. And, of course, you have the mountain regions. And looking at separating that into three different color codes. That way, when you're a visitor, you can know that I'm in a coastal region because the signs are blue. I'm in an orange region because the signs are orange. Ferndale, as you can see, is kind of in the middle of at least two of them, and we have the best view of the mountain region. So we're sort of unique, but then again, everyone thinks that they're unique. So we talked about the local iconography. And I'm actually going to switch to this next one real quick because we can still look at it. So first, what Merge said is everybody wants the mountain. Every single one of you in this room wants to have the mountain. And for that matter, every single community in the Pacific Northwest, almost all of them, has a mountain in there. So I said, that really doesn't make you unique. We said, but we have the view. It's the iconic view of Mount Baker, so we need to have that. Because one of the other things that we struggled with Ferndale was we sort of lack an identity. No matter how much we say that we have an identity, when someone says, well, you know, Pioneer, we say, well, gosh, you know, we don't want to become that theme community. We don't just want to be Pioneer. The train bridge, well, what's that? You know, we would recognize it, but what's that? A barn? Well, we're not necessarily agricultural. The river? Okay, but isn't that exactly what our logo is right now? So we came to this one where it is pretty clear. I mean, there's a fern, there's the mountain. We show the sunrise behind the mountain, and we show a little bit of iconography as far as the wagon wheel. That's also the sunrise.
Is it the sun?
It could be the sun if you want it to be.
It
could be
a
gear if you want it to be, wagon wheel if you want it to be. It does allow us to play off of this.
Talk slow for me.
No, I married a woman from Ohio, but so I know. I'm going to stay as city administrator longer than I'm married. this does allow us some opportunity to play off of it. All of these are subject to change, but believe me, this was not our first go at it. We went through several iterations. And I'm going to move on to the next slide, which I don't expect you to be able to really make too much sense of, but we'll be able to provide this to you.
Slides.
I'm sorry?
We could read Katie's slides.
I know. for Ferndale, our objective, number one, is to get visitors off of the freeway. We could have the greatest sign system imaginable, but if we can't get them off of the freeway, it does little good. We also want to provide clear and consistent directions into downtown. So many visitors think that our downtown is actually Hagen's. They don't know that there's a river, and they don't even cross into our historic downtown because our signage kind of suggests that they have arrived once they get to Hagen's. We also need to create destination indicators and to enable that transition from the vehicle to the pedestrian signage, and that's really important, where if you're in a vehicle, the sign needs to be designed for your visibility when you're going on along at about 25 miles per hour, and you're distracted by other things. But once you get close to your destination, especially because you're not going to have the rock star treatment of being able to park right in front of the business that you're going to, we need to enable them to find where parking is, to understand that it's safe, and then to be able to get out of their vehicle and walk and to be introduced to pedestrian-level signage. That talks to them at a pedestrian level, and I'll get into that in just a second. We also need to eliminate the redundant and the outdated signage. That's going to be a big part of it, where we're probably going to be removing as many signs as we actually add, because right now there is that jumble and there's that confusion when people are entering. Going to go through this really quick because there's been some questions about it. As you know, we've started to put in destination signage at City Hall and then at Pioneer Park, and I'll show you that. The question was, why do that now? Someone's left who is asking the question too. Why do that now when we're working on a wayfinding system? And that's because our destination signage needs to have the same terminology as the wayfinding system. So Pioneer Village versus Pioneer Park or Pioneer Park versus Pioneer Village, they have to be saying the same thing. But for the destination signage, we also want to make sure that it conveys a little bit of the sense of place of where it's at, as well as relate the fact that the city buildings have similar signage so that you can recognize also that they are a city facility. So they're doing a couple of those different things all at once. And we started off with the City Hall sign, which is 2018 utilizing 2017 funding. what we wanted to do with this is we had a lot of people thinking that City Hall was actually this facility, or that it was the police department, or that it was the library. Until we put this sign in, it had limited ADA accessibility. It was just not something that was thought of in the mid-1980s, that there might be some folks who are differently abled who weren't able to come from the sidewalk into City Hall. So we were able to kind of kill two birds, not flamingos, but two other birds with one stone with that. It was also an aesthetic improvement. We're talking, as you know, about improving City Hall to be able to provide us with staffing levels and our needs for the next generation or two. If and when we do remodel City Hall, this sign would be expected to stay, or it could go wherever we want it to go. But this was a first step in making City Hall a little bit more attractive.
It was also a safety improvement for those people who had to change the old sign.
Very true. It was a little bit of a trap. Next, we go to the Pioneer Park sign. This is going to be built within the next couple of months using 2018 funding. What this does is it seeks to reflect the cedar slab siding of the Pioneer cabins while using the same typeface as we did at City Hall. It also provides somewhat of an internal wayfinding sign for all of the different things that are going on within Pioneer Park. So Pioneer Village, Star Park, the Pioneer Pavilion, Senior Center, and then the Phillips 66 ball fields as well. Because, again, we have a lot of folks who are confused. They might get to Pioneer Park, but they might not know that Phillips 66 is on down the way, or that we actually do have the Senior Center within the facility, or that Star Park is on down the way. We can put in additional destination elements in there for them, but this was, we risk having sign blight if we have every single one of those things have their own individual signs.
Do you imagine, like, the skate park you would be at that sign, too? But that's because you'd have to go and then turn.
It's no different than the Phillips 66 ball fields. You would be able to see the skate park from where this sign is if you leaned slightly to the right.
So for wayfinding, you're considering Pioneer Park, that whole area at this
point? This would be the entry to Pioneer Park. There would also be the expectation that we could have more of the guidance signs, too, as you get closer to your destinations, and I'll show you that in just a second, where, again, there's a lot of that psychology in there saying, we don't want to leave a visitor confused, where now they've gotten to Pioneer Park and, oh, there's another sign for Phillips 66. So what we would have is, well, I'll show you in just a minute. I talked about this just a little bit with Pioneer Park. Going to skip over to freeway signage before we get back to the discussion of wayfinding in particular, where we believe that WashDOT's signage does not accurately reflect where Ferndale is and what Ferndale is. And we're kind of in some ongoing negotiations with them as far as ways to improve this. The negotiations ultimately are how much the city wants to pay, but we're seeing whether or not we can't modify that a little bit. So first, when you're northbound, WashDOT says to all visitors that Ferndale is actually 5 miles away when they're about at the airport, just a little bit south of the airport. Actually, we're only 1.5 miles away from the city limits. We also, once you're into Ferndale, in between Slater and Main Street, inform that Ferndale is the next two exits, where, again, Ferndale's the next four exits. It's no better southbound, where WashDOT says that we're 10 miles away when we're actually 7 miles away. And once you're 1.5 miles into city limits, you are informed, again, of the Ferndale next two exits. So whether this is a small town saying we're bigger than we think, or whether this is actually something where we have more people going to Main Street and Portal, our two most congested interchanges, only to find out that they could have taken Slater or Grandview, is up to some debate. But one of the main things that WashDOT is trying to concentrate on is lowering the amount of traffic on the main line and to cease using the main line so much for the intercity traffic. So this does both, where if we can have people get off of the main line when they should, it allows them to use our surface streets more. It also allows us potentially to reduce some congestion at our busy areas. So WashDOT has said, hey, that's great. Pay for it. We have an LTAC grant from the city for approximately $12,000. That's going to begin funding stuff in 2019. The estimated cost of two signs is approximately $20,000 or so. That's because we need to go through WashDOT's sign-making apparatus. We're wanting to talk to them about this because we feel that since these signs have been up for about 20, 25 years, that WashDOT probably could have taken into account the Growth Management Act and the fact that our city limits have not changed in over a decade. We'll see whether or not we have that opportunity or not. Anyhow, we go to WashDOT's basic requirements. Because you're driving at 65 to 70 miles an hour, you can only have three different inputs on there. You can only show three exits. So we would have the opportunity to say Ferndale exits. This is our choice. Ferndale exits, Slater Road 2 miles, Main Street 4 miles, Portaway 5 miles, and something similar if you're southbound. Or if we want to spend double the money, we could say Ferndale next 4 exits. That's going to be a decision point from Ferndale's perspective, which sign we would like or which type of sign we would like. I think that there's, you know, six of one, half dozen of another. My personal preference, I think, would be next 4 exits because folks would be able to figure out which exit they're taking after that. We now move to wayfinding. And I'm going fast because I know that you might have questions or you might not. Entry signage. I said downtown emphasis, but actually that's a future one. What these signs in this sign family show are in the middle, a entryway sign where this is when you get off of Main Street. It's a fairly substantial sign that really does give a sense of a gateway in. It shows the logo relatively large. There might be opportunities. This, again, is just an initial draft to do some other things with them. And then Councilmember Watson, one of your questions as far as Phillips 66 was what kind of signs would we have that show this? These signs are generally for those Welcome to Ferndale signs, but then this next set do show those vehicular-oriented ones where we would have one saying Phillips 66 soccer fields, or not soccer fields, Phillips 66 ball fields this way. So we would have the smaller signs once you get closer to the destination, where once you're inbound, you're coming into Ferndale, you would have probably the three things, historic downtown Ferndale, shopping, and recreation activities or something like that. Once you cross the bridge, you would then start to get more specific, where you might have City Hall campus this way, Pioneer Park and Phillips 66 this way. And then once you got even closer, you would have the more specific signs that give you that immediate pointer. That's something that we're going to be able to work out a lot more, where we're going to be working with Merge to figure out precisely what the psychology is, because the risk is you have so many signs that it becomes too cluttered and there's a sign on every corner.
Mary, we don't have to follow the colors. Like, you know, browns are usually parks. I'm thinking of the internet. When you're on the freeway, if you want to see a park, it's always a brown sign. Do we not have to do that, or are you doing some other kind of branding at this point?
It would be other branding. Because those are the WashDOT signs once you get out of the main line and outside of the WashDOT sphere of influence. You are not obligated to follow those, but using similar iconography is good, because that's what people are familiar with. So parking, obviously, we'd use the standardized parking sign. As far as wayfinding is concerned, what you sometimes see is, say, on the lower one or the central one of these different panels, one of them might be brown if you want it to be brown, just to reflect that standard colorization. Then we move to the pedestrian-oriented ones, where these are more of an emphasis for downtown pedestrian. Parking is going to be a very important one for Ferndale, because We have more parking than what most visitors believe we do. It's just that it's difficult to find. And visitors, I'm sorry.
Most residents.
And most residents, too. And especially for visitors, though, there's the fear that I'm going to have to go 10 blocks this way to parking, when, in fact, you really only have to go a block or two. You're just going north and south instead of east and west. So that's going to be an important thing. And also to have, now you've reached that destination of parking that you can see. But then also having more pedestrian-level maps and kiosks, that comes back to our complete streets, and it comes back to where we're talking about downtown, making it a more attractive place to walk, so that there is history in Ferndale, and there are interesting things to do in Ferndale, but we don't do a great job of displaying that to people who are walking. So this makes for a more interesting appearance. All right, so... The costs are high, at least compared to what we're used to. So what we have in front of us, what council has as a decision point, first, we don't need to do this all in 1 year. We don't need to do this, period, but we don't need to do it all in 1 year. We believe that there are different funding sources that we could look at, anything from LTAC funding to port funding to complete streets funding to general fund. There are a lot of different options. It's difficult to mix and match and to expect that the whole thing is going to work together if we decide to just kind of order a la carte. But we could look at saying, okay, let's look at an entryway sign and let's put an emphasis on downtown. And if we find that we have the budget that we could put in more, or we could look at the entire wayfinding for a corridor, or we could go from there. Right now, we have a $35,000. No, we don't. Is that?
We have $50,000 in the budget.
Okay. That thank you.
Which fund, Circa?
It's in the street fund. It's line 1161.
So these are decision points for council. We wanted to bring this to you because you are talking about the budget. This is not a mission critical element. It's something that if we woke up tomorrow and we had it, it would be an improvement and it would address a number of different issues. You get to decide what the priorities are for your spending. So, we would be looking to you for direction. Of course, this can continue to be ferreted out as we go forward, but I will leave it to you. So, again, what we're looking at now is to finalize conceptual design, finalize the specific sign messages. So this is happening as part of this merge study that's paid for separately from us. So the good thing is, no matter which way you decide to go, we would have this that we can say, okay, initiate now. Discuss the funding strategy, the go, no-go, reach out to stakeholders to see if there are others. So with that, wondering if you have any questions.
From council tonight. First, that was a great presentation. Fantastic. Councilmember Greg Hansen.
So the Port Bellingham financed this original study. Is that correct? It was a combination of the Port Bellingham and the City of Bellingham.
In Whatcom County.
In Whatcom County. Yeah. And the Port has, correct me if I'm wrong, already dedicated a significant amount of funds for 2019 for some like gateway sign. Mm-hmm. Yes?
Correct.
So my point being that the Port has been very involved in this project, and it's likely that Port funds may be available in the coming years to see this project through. And so it's not as though we have to come up with all of this ourselves, that in fact the Port helped. It was Port Economic Development Funds that helped us put the signage on City Hall, and they're going to help us do the signage for Pinewood Park, right?
That is correct. I understand from Bellingham Whatcom County Tourism that the county executive has been briefed on this and has indicated that he would work hard to find additional funding to support at least those gateways. So gave you the, I think, worst possible budget so that you know, And it's only up from here, or down from here.
So what do you? What would you use the $50,000 for that's currently in the budget?
In my mind, the priorities would be the Main Street corridor, because that already exists, which would include that travel pattern there, as well as getting rid of the redundant signage, or downtown. And downtown...
Either or, we'd have to do...
Either or. There would be some discussion about exactly how that would happen, but within downtown, once people get to downtown, there are opportunities to make it more attractive. Now, the downside with that is, if all goes well, hopefully we see more development downtown where there's going to be more construction, where one of the worst things is to put in a sign only to have it taken out soon after. Wouldn't necessarily see that with the Main Street corridor, which is our most heavily trafficked.
I guess if you get them on Main Street, once they get across the river, though, you've got to help them at that point to get where they're going.
Right, right. If council wanted, right now, because this is not something that we spent any money on, this is entirely a separate program and study, my guess is that Merge or Bellingham Whatcom Tourism would at some point say, all right, this has become kind of Ferndale-focused, and we would expect Ferndale to pay for additional review to show how we could what we could do for $50,000 or $35,000. And that could be something where if council were to wish to include something like that, we might be able to have them do some of that work for a fairly small amount of money to understand what 50 would get us.
Well, I mean, I was going to ask is if Merge has kind of given a list of priorities, I mean, what would their suggestions for the first set of signs? Because I mean, I think it was clear that you know, this needs to be in phases over 4 years or longer, and that I was just wondering, did they come up with a recommendation of here's what you really should be thinking about first, and here are the things that you know might come 2, 3, 4 years down the road? Or have they not given us that?
They've not yet, where this is really their first. We're starting the rollout of this presentation where they said, here's a concept for this overall program, where I think that would be that next layer.
More questions, Council? Are you looking for any direction from council at this point?
No, not at this point. I think that the answers will come when you vote on the budget, and then you know we can go from there. I'd be happy to answer any other questions before then, but if you were to include this in the budget, then I think one of the next steps in 2019 would be to say, okay, let's figure out the best way to wisely spend this.
Thank you, Mr. Burnett.
Thank you.
And speaking of budget, going down the line to item E, this is a public hearing. We are required to on the budget, so we will do that tonight. And I'm going to pass it off to our finance director, Zirka.
So this is the first hearing, public hearing of two for the 2019 budget. The budget is available, a preliminary budget is available on our website. You may also come to City Hall and we will give you a copy of it, a paper copy. And the second public hearing will be on December 3rd.
Very good. So, Council, this is a public hearing. If you're ready to open it, unless there are questions first, but since we had a work session, I think perhaps we'll open up the public hearing. And our city clerk will read the special rules for that.
A public hearing is a formal opportunity to give testimony to the Council for consideration in their decision-making process. Written comments may also be submitted to the city clerk prior to the beginning of the hearing. When the mayor calls your name, proceed as follows. Audience members who signed up prior to the beginning of our meeting will be called first to speak at this public hearing. If you are unable to sign up before the meeting, you will be given an opportunity to address the council once we've gotten through all the speakers listed on the hearing sheets. Each speaker should state his or her name and address for the record and will be given 3 minutes to address the council. When a large group of individuals supports the same position on an issue, we encourage the selection of one or two representatives to speak on behalf of the entire group.
Very good. And we'll open the public hearing now. And we didn't have anybody sign up. Looking to the audience, if someone would like to speak on your city budget proposal for 2019. Seeing none, we will close the public hearing. And I believe this is either time for discussion or move on.
There's no action.
Since there's no action tonight. So we'll continue this at the next meeting. It's okay. Very good. Moving on to park facilities rental fees and Mr. Sweeney.
Well, after all the heavy lifting that you guys have been through tonight, I would hope that this would be a walk in the park. So, as we discussed in committees, there was three goals with updating our park rental fees. The first was our rental fees have not been updated in over 5 years, and the costs to maintaining those facilities have continued to go up year after year. So there was some minor inflation decisions built into that. We also wanted to address evolving situations. Our fees for park rentals were mainly geared at athletic rentals, and we have had a number of applications recently come through where they just want to use our space, not necessarily to play a game, but to host a festival or do a Boy Scout camp out. And so they wouldn't necessarily need a field reset fee or a lights turnoff fee. So we've added language about that. Could you actually go to the code change? So we've added a flat fee for those sorts of uses. Thank you. And then finally, we want to streamline some of the redundant fees. So the previous code language had lots of language with various tacked on, added on fees, and we wanted to roll those all into one fee for the usage to make it easier for our customers. One more point before I let you take a whack at it. We raised concerns about the Boys and Girls Club and their usage of the facilities. I had a lovely conversation with Hennifer, who's the athletic director for the Boys and Girls Club. We resolved their concerns. This will not impact them.
Good. Council, questions?
I think we're still digesting the $250,000 for signs.
What would be your pleasure tonight? This has been reviewed by a committee.
Yeah. I move to approve the amended part fees.
Second. Moved by Councilmember Watson, seconded by Councilmember Kennedy to adopt the rental fees for the park. Discussion. You guys really hope to get it by 7, don't you? Seeing none. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed nay, and it has passed 7-2-0.
Thank you.
Going on now to mayor reports. A couple things coming up. This Sunday is the 100th anniversary of Armistice, the ending of World War I, which eventually became the celebration to be called Veterans Day. As far as I know, this is the first time the city has partnered with the local American Legion to put on a Veterans Day celebration and ceremony with a number of special guests. And I'd like to personally invite you to attend. 2 o'clock at Pioneer Pavilion in our Pioneer Park this Sunday. Which segues nicely, recognition of the 100th anniversary at the end of a war, to our humble hometown hero today. And we're very pleased to announce that on this date, Monday, November 5th, 2018, Dick Stone is recognized for his years of service. A veteran of World War II, Dick served with the 526th Armored Infantry Battalion and fought in the Battle of the Bulge, where he was captured by the Germans. Since the war, he made Ferndale his home, teaching English at Ferndale High School for the next 30 years. He also volunteers with the American Ex-Prisoners of War, a nonprofit that helps veterans heal body and soul after their service. And so we are proud to put his name in the record today as a true, humble hometown hero. And I think you folks all have the real copy to sign, and then we'll get that to Dick, who looks good. But he's 95 or something there, getting up there. So we're glad that we still have him. My last mention is just to say briefly that I believe that Ferndale has a bright and exciting future that's not dependent upon any single mayor, any single council member. any single city administrator is dependent upon the heart of its people. And so I am genuinely bullish on Ferndale, and I'm very pleased to once again reaffirm the announcement of the city that Mr. Burnett will be our next city administrator beginning rather soon here, and that Haley Miller will give a shot at the planning director department, the community development director. So some changes here. We appreciate your patience as we get reorganized and as we look forward to working with you. Those are all the reports from the mayor and council reports. A quiet council, thank you. Thank you for being here. Staff, community development, / city administrator in waiting. Public works. Finance.
Nothing.
City clerk.
Nothing.
It's just weenie.
I'm sorry. We have our last parks event of the year, Turbo Kick, which is a great little exercise routine with the team members from Everyday Fitness. Will be held November 17th, Saturday.
They need elected officials to kick. Is that
they
part
do.
Of
they okay. do. So that's 10 a.m. November 17th at the Pioneer Pavilion. Bring clothes you can move around in. Should be about an hour. It should be lively. Good way to get a head start on that Thanksgiving meal. Are you going to talk about tomorrow? Tomorrow we'll be doing Operation Crimson Ram, which is not some occult sacrifice, but it's actually an emergency preparedness drill with the Ferndale School District. Yes, well, you know, it could go either way sometimes. And finally, the most important sacrifice that you can make would be sacrificing a little bit of your time to fill out your ballot, get all your ballots in by tomorrow, drop them in the ballot box to make sure that they get counted. Democracy is not a spectator sport. Every ballot deserves a chance to be heard.
Well, son, and our last chief of police. Welcome, sir.
Thank you. Just a brief review. Halloween night, we had several local businesses donate candy to us. And in turn, we went out, several officers and some volunteers, including the mayor, and handed out that candy to kids around the city. And it was a good way for us to interact in a positive manner with kids and families, and it was very well received. This was the most candy we've ever had, 201 pounds of candy. A few pounds got lost on their way out of the police department. I found lots of wrappers and garbage cans, but... No, just kidding. We handed out just over 200 pounds of candy. It was very well received. It was a good night.
We were giving out fist loads of candy, not single pieces. I'm looking for a motion to adjourn.
Second.
Moved and seconded. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed nay. You folks have a great evening.